Welcome to the show. My name is Paul Nichols. I'm your host, and you're listening to It's Your Money, the financial podcast that pulls back the curtain on the industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. Welcome. I hope this finds you well. I'm excited to bring another podcast to you. This will be about a 20-minute podcast and a special one at that. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. If you're a first-time listener, we have a treat for you. If this is your first show checking out It's Your Money, I have Daniel Goldie with me today. He's the best-selling author, co-author of a book that's basically on every bestseller list out there called The Investment Answer. It's a financial book, and I believe it is a essential investment primer that every American should read. I believe it should actually be required reading of every high school senior, and I believe that it will change your life if you'll read it, because you'll really start to understand how simple investing can be. What's incredible about this book specifically, besides the fact that it is just so simple, basic, and it does provide a very sensible and academic approach to how to invest, but it was co-authored by a man who spent the last 6 months of his life writing it. He had terminal brain cancer. He was very aware of his situation and wanted to leave a legacy. And I'm going to ask Daniel about that today. But first of all, Daniel Goldie is the president of Goldie Financial Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He's a former professional tennis player and Wimbledon quarterfinalist. He's been recognized by Barron's as one of the top 100 independent financial advisors in the U.S., and he's a graduate from Stanford University and has an MBA from the Haas School of Business, the University of California at Berkeley. Congratulations on the success. How's the mainstream reacted to it?
I heard from a few of the mainstream media, like Yahoo Finance had me on, a few other places. It wasn't a controversial interview. It was kind of a supportive interview. So I think the ones, if there's a media outlet that's not in agreement with the general ideas of the book, I think they're just not having me on their programs.
Right. And I meant more so that it's just not something that's taught. It's not propagated. The whole concept of an academic approach to investing and how simple it really is. I mean, your philosophy is basically own the market, and you're going to get what the market will bear, and sometimes it's a bear market. Would that be a nutshell, a statement that might describe what your philosophy is?
I think that's accurate, yeah. There's, like you say, investing does not have to be complicated. It just needs to primarily have a disciplined approach and an approach that's consistent with how markets work. And unfortunately, most investment approaches lack one or both of those things.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Dan, how did you make the transition from a fairly successful athlete to, obviously you must have had finance in your background in school, right? I mean, you studied
yes.
Finance. What brought you to the point where you became independent? Because it took me going through three broker dealers and many years in the industry for the light bulb to kind of go on. Did you start in the mainstream with major brokerage firms and then go independent, or did you just go that direction to begin with?
Well, fortunately, I just started independent right off the bat. I took a few months when I retired from the professional tennis tour to look around the industry and try and figure out what I wanted to do. And that's when two things struck me. One is that the traditional financial services approach really didn't work very well. And then I also met with Dimensional Fund Advisors back in 1991 when they were just starting to work with independent advisors. And those two things really shaped my approach to investing. So I've been working independently ever since for 20 years.
It's a tough road to hoe because so many lost and sleepless nights worried about active management and the effect it had on my clients' accounts. And really didn't get it until I understood the stuff that you have in your book.
I think that's the most typical story in our industry is people coming to this after, back to my co-author, Gordon Murray. He worked 25 years on Wall Street, and he had heard of these ideas, but he never actually had anybody put it together for him in a way where you could actually, he actually could understand that you can do this in the real world and have a complete portfolio of following these ideas. That was new to him. And that's when his light bulb turned on.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Would you agree that the vast majority of advisors out there, and I talk about this often on my show, going from college, for example, into the industry, they really don't kind of know what they don't know. It's really shocking how I think of a quote from the former chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, Arthur Levitt, when he talked about education and how much the industry spends on it for investors. They believe that undereducated investors may be more profitable. And, you know, I was kind of going along lemming-like, if you will, and didn't even realize I was, if I may say, part of the problem rather than part of the solution. And it was really, it was a gut check for me when the light bulb came on. Have you found that to be true with people you've talked to?
Well, I think that one of the challenges we have in our educational system today is that we're not educating people on just the basics of money management and investing. Mm-hmm. And even in higher levels of finance in school, the ideas that are covered in the book on passive investing and the like are covered, but they're covered in a way that's not instructive on how to do it in the real world. It's really more theoretical
versus practical.
Yeah, and that was my case, and so I was familiar with these ideas, as was Gordon, but. Again, it's not really put in practical terms, and I'd like to see that change. Like, I'd like to see the book or something like it be used as a regular course material, either for seniors in high school or seniors in college, to prepare them for being proper investors and just workers with 401ks and investors of their capital.
I absolutely agree with that. I want to echo it. I just had that conversation this morning over breakfast with my wife. We do educational courses. In fact, we do them at San Diego University, and we do them here at Penn State, etc. And it's really adult education. And I totally agree. And we're going to work at helping that get in our local community with some of the people in adult education areas, because I think it should be required reading of every high school senior. Really.
Agreed, yeah.
Because, you know, the number one thing I hear, I'm curious if you find this to be true in your practice, the number one thing I hear from people when I start to approach them with an academic approach and they start to get an idea of the simplicity of it, I hear really apologies. That's the number one thing I hear from people, apologies for not understanding this stuff or even basic stuff. And I have to reassure people over and over, Dan, that, you know, it's not an indictment on your intellect. It's an indictment on a system that really hasn't found that component, figured out how to either present it or the reason why they should. And again, I agree that books like The Investment Answer are the answer to just some basic financial acumen for some of these kids that are clueless, coming out of school.
Yeah, it's really the educational system that is failing this part of our society, and Gordon and I have discussed this quite a bit when we were writing the book, that these ideas, if they were only presented in school, that would solve a lot of the problems. And then the other problem is that because these ideas are not taught formally, we have to learn these things on our own. And it's very difficult to do that because we only pick up things bit by bit, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. So it's very hard, once you're out in the world, to number one, have time to do it, and number two, be able to do it in an effective way where you're screening out the misinformation and capturing the useful information and doing that effectively. It's very hard, and that was one of the things we had hoped that this book would do, is that put everything in a simple, easy to read sort of one source material, and there are other books like it that hopefully will help improve things for people.
I totally agree with you, and again, I appreciate the fact that you guys have written this. And I want to talk about the do-it-yourself thing real quick, but I want to just echo what you said by making this statement. There's not a lack of information out there, especially in our technological age, but there is, in my opinion, a lack of clarity. And that's what I love so much about this book. That's why I'm giving it to family members. I'm giving it to people I care about. I'm having clients come in because I believe that this is practical information that's put out there in a way that most people can grasp, and it's not information overload. People feel stupid because they get all the information and can't discern what's going on, but it's a very complex industry. So again, I'm excited and really appreciative that that you and Gordon have put this together. If I may, just for a moment, I just want to spend a couple minutes, if I may, talking about Gordon's motivation, because what's really intrigued me about this this whole scenario, obviously, I'm sure you've heard this many times, is the fact that Mr. Murray was faced with terminal illness, and he knew that he was going to be going in a period of time. And for those people out there that may be of a cynical nature, I just wanted to clear this up. You know, there's the devil's advocate out there that says, well, this guy needed to do it for his family. He needed to do it financially, hoping that the book would create revenue for him. And I don't get that sense at all. And I wanted to see if you would speak to, obviously, you're his friend and his advisor. And obviously, you're not him. You can't, you know, really speak to his heart and what he felt in his heart. But can you give me and the listeners kind of an idea of what his real core motivation was? Because if it was a legacy, the mere fact that we're talking about him, I mean, well done.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This was one of the purest, best people on the earth. I mean, this guy was loved by many, and he was a terrific best friend to me. And his motives were 100% pure. I mean, he spent the last 2 years of his life giving back. Once he was initially diagnosed, he just focused everything on giving back to people. And he resigned his job and just volunteered his time and traveled around speaking to people. He appeared in front of Congress on financial reform. I mean, this was someone who just devoted this last part of his life entirely to giving back and gave freely of his time and his knowledge. There was no profit motive here at all. In fact, we were giving the book away online because we wanted this information out there. Mm-hmm. So he did this and I helped him purely to give back to people and help those who we felt needed the information.
I'm praying for a change myself, and I believe I'm going to see that in my career for sure. There's a sense I've just noticed in the last 2 years, kind of just a feeling. I can't really put my finger on it, but there seems to be kind of a sense that there's a migration more toward education and hopefully clarity, which will lead to confidence, because it's rare to find confidence as it relates to investing in most people's minds. Would you echo that?
Yeah, I think that the industry is changing, although I think it will take a very, very long time to make any significant improvements in this area. I mean, this industry has been around for a long, long time, and it's an uphill battle because the traditional forces of how financial services have been delivered have been really more of a sales-driven kind of culture, and I think it'll be that way for a long time. And I also think that there's a lot of behavioral biases that we all have because we're human beings that will keep this change coming slowly because just behaviorally we tend to think in ways that are different from the ideas of the book, and we tend to want to find that advisor or that mutual fund or that investment approach that's going to quote unquote beat the market or outperform. It's in our DNA to look for that.
Hey, we want to win. We want to win, you know?
It almost seems un-American in a way to not be out there trying to find somebody or some way that's going to somehow give you that free lunch or whatever. And yeah, so we have those forces also working against change. So it could be a while before there's any real meaningful change. But we'll see. It'd be interesting to watch.
Well, I want to congratulate you for attempting to make a dent anyway, and we're going to continue to aggressively promote the book and for many years to come, hopefully, and as revisions may come, I don't know. If you were to maybe do a little elevator speech or a little 15-second soundbite on the one thing that Mr. Murray would like people to get, what would you think that would be?
He always said that he wanted people to understand that there's an important difference between investing and speculating. And he thinks that most investors who think they're investing, they're actually speculating. And the way he would define investing is where you take your capital and you deploy it across global capital markets in a very diversified, low-cost way. And everything else, he would say, is some degree or other a form of speculation. And that can range anywhere from, trying to gamble on finding mispriced stocks or trying to find the hot mutual fund or investing in your friend's restaurant or something like that. These are all various forms of speculating where you're betting, basically. And he said that he wanted investors to understand the difference.
I want to thank you for getting up early and taking some time, and I'm sure our many listeners, we get about 1,000 downloads a month of our show all over the country and internationally, will appreciate the 20 minutes that you've given us. We've been talking to the co-author of The Investment Answer, Daniel Goldie. It's a best-selling book. I'm excited about it. Just ordered 2 more cases last week. We're handing it to everyone. I encourage you out there, ladies and gentlemen, who are listening, to get the book, but don't just buy one. Buy at least 5 of them and hand them to people you love and care about, and maybe we can create a little tsunami in this country as it relates to getting people hungry for the truth and pulling back the curtain and exposing that, which is my mantra. We believe that you don't need to know everything. You just need to know the few right things. Daniel, thank you so much this morning for your time, and we're going to be continuing to root for you in a major way and wish you much success. I hope the book sells millions, gazillions of copies.
Well, we hope so. We hope so too. And I appreciate being on your show. It was a lot of fun talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. You too.
Bye. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Best-selling author Daniel Goldie. The book is The Investment Answer. Order it. Go to Barnes & Noble, wherever you can. Pick up the book. Order a half a dozen. Buy a half a dozen. Give it to people you love and you care about. I hope this has enriched your life, as we hope that every show that we do enriches your life. And we'll be back next week with our normal market update. You've been listening to Paul Nichols, the investor coach, registered investment advisor, financial abundance. If you'd like to learn more about an educational and academic approach to investing, you can check out our website, financialabundanceinc.com. There's a plethora of information on there. And of course, there's many, many shows here on iTunes. I believe iTunes keeps about 6 months of shows, if I'm not mistaken, but we have about 3.5-4 years on our website. So check it out. Paul Nichols, the investor coach. You've been listening to It's Your Money. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you next week.